Putin said he's hopeful that the summit will make it possible to outline steps to resolve the Nagorno-Karabakh issue, adding the Armenian leadership has the political will to resolve the conflict with Azerbaijan. Putin, however, noted Moscow does not impose anything on anyone and only offers a peaceful solution.
I know that you have the political will for this, and we support it in every possible way. We must find the key points that will allow us to move forward. This conflict has been going on for decades, so we still need to end it sometime.
Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan reacted to Putin's remarks, voicing his readiness to accept Moscow's offer to establish diplomatic relations with Baku. Azerbaijan President Ilham Aliyev also said that the Karabakh conflict has already become history and it is time to talk about the normalization of relations between Yerevan and Baku. He expressed gratitude to Russia for trying to resolve the issue. Some experts believe the U.S. and some European countries, particularly France, are trying to foment discord between Armenia from Russia, reform their friendly relations to hostility, withdraw Armenia from the CSTO and encourage Yerevan for a new large-scale military conflict with Azerbaijan.
France is actively intervening in the conflict. NATO's interests are visible behind it. The USA has one of its largest embassies in Yerevan, the same with Azerbaijan. There goes Israel and the UK. The latter is one of Turkey's closest friends. Another block of countries is being formed there, but they all work in the same direction. They are opposed to the participation of Iran and Russia in resolving this conflict and are trying to replace the participation of neighboring states with that of Western ones. This deprives the people of Armenia and Azerbaijan of a peaceful solution.
A six-week war between Azerbaijan and Armenia in 2020, which claimed the lives of more than 6,500 troops on both sides, ended with a Russian brokered deal that saw Yerevan cede swathes of territory that it had controlled for several decades. Last month, 286 people from both sides were killed in the flare-up of new clashes.
Moscow's task is to find ground for a compromise. The interference of Turkey, France, Britain and the United States in the Armenian-Azerbaijani relations in recent months, the so-called Western Peace Project may simply threaten the disappearance of Nagorno-Karabakh. Most experts believe the mediation of such countries is a trap from which there is no way out. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
A refugee center in Sevastopol, Crimea. Most people here have come from Kherson, a Russian-controlled city now under attack by Ukraine.
I wanted to leave Kherson because it was dangerous there. Ukrainian troops are shooting at civilians. Artillery strikes and rockets are coming from the Ukrainian side. They attack both civilian and military objects. They shell our villages, they destroy our homes and kill children.
She can't hold back the tears.
If there is any connection, I call my friends who are staying in a basement. They tell us stories. A five-story building was shelled and people hear moaning from the rubble. When people tried to rescue them, snipers killed the person who was trying to help and others ran away. Snipers are working everywhere. There was a couple working at the meat factory and the woman was pregnant. The snipers shot both of them in the back. It is Ukraine that does this. The people who remain are considered to be separatists by Ukraine.
Now, many of the people here are scared of Ukrainian reprisals. I've even met an elderly couple here. They're on the Ukrainian kill list, Mirot Verets. Why? Because they're doctors and working in a civilian hospital in Kherson, and they are viewed as Russian collaborators just for doing so.
Roughly 70% of the people in Kherson were pro-Russian and 30% were pro-Ukrainian. The evacuation took place very peacefully and quietly because it came before the military activities began. I have no complaints about the evacuation. The city might be slightly destroyed, but what is more important is that it stays in our hands and victory will be ours.
While pro-Ukrainians may dispute her percentage claim, with Russia forcibly evacuating tens of thousands of civilians from the city, they are now turning it into a fortress. with less risk of either side killing civilians.
Some refugees signed papers to receive financial support. Then they returned 2 weeks later and asked for psychological help. Some people adapt easily, but later they need to talk it out. Some need work immediately, but others need cultural activities to forget the past life and switch to normal life in Sevastopol.
A map in the office. The four regions now claimed by Russia has been colored in with a highlighter. How much more or less will be painted pink will be decided in the coming months, perhaps even years. Meanwhile, it is civilians on both sides of the battle lines who continue to be killed or have their lives turned to turmoil. Johnny Miller, Sevastopol, Crimea.
Importing liquefied natural gas from the US is costing the EU a fortune, and leaders across the 27-nation bloc are looking for a better deal. EU trade ministers met on Monday. They are also not happy with Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. It includes state aid for American manufacturers that will put EU car builders at a disadvantage.
I will be pretty frank. I think in the form how it was presented, I think for the European Union is unacceptable.
This is all happening due to Western sanctions against Russia. Inflation is out of control. We've asked the European Commission why it's not trying to broker peace between Russia and Ukraine.
It just seems to be not on the agenda at all. Am I completely off the mark in that regard?
We have always said that whoever can use its influence to stop the war in Russia and to make to stop the war in Ukraine, we will support this.
EU trade ministers accuse Russia of using food as a weapon after Moscow left a UN-negotiated deal to facilitate grain shipments from Ukraine. It follows drone attacks on Russia's Black Sea fleet near Sevastopol on Saturday. The Kremlin blames Kiev, helped by British experts. Eurozone inflation has climbed to a new record high of 10.7%. EU leaders are being urged to tackle a growing social crisis in the bloc.
It is in the hand of the decision makers because it is very easy to solve this problem. And it is a shame for the European Union and for the member states.
Many claim the West could have prevented the war in Ukraine by listening to Russia's security concerns surrounding the issue of NATO expansion. Massive public protests are forecast as wages in the EU fail to keep up with soaring inflation. Already here in Belgium, police have agreed to hold a one-day strike on the 9th of November. The country's firefighters have announced they will do the same in December. A date for that has yet to be announced. It's set to be a winter of discontent for EU governments. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
History repeats itself once more in Lebanon as President Michel Aoun steps out of a presidential palace, which will remain vacant for an unknown period of time. Addressing flocks of supporters, Aoun said a chapter has ended in Lebanon's politics and a new chapter will begin.
A new phase begins, and this new phase requires struggle and work to exit our crises. The country is looted, and we have to carry out a lot of efforts to uproot corruption.
Aoun talked about the recent agreement with Israel to demarcate Lebanon's maritime borders. He said the deal secured the nation's access to its natural resources, adding that the future revenues should be used to repair the Lebanese economy.
The demarcation of our maritime border will allow us to extract the national treasure of petrol and gas, which would grant us the needed capital to come out of our economic and financial crisis. We hope to see a sovereign fund that would be used for development and also for the upcoming generations.
Aoun took office in 2016. His was marred by mass protests, a severe economic crisis, and currency collapse, and the August 2020 portside blast that killed hundreds. President Michel Aoun ends his term today at a time when Lebanon is deeply divided on various issues. But it was this term that has given Lebanon what experts are calling a golden opportunity to become a gas exporter and salvage its economy. President Aoun does not only leave behind a country without a head of state, but he goes back to his residency. The political divide remains quite entrenched, and experts see that the maritime border deal proves that the West has lifted its undeclared blockade on Lebanon.
In Lebanon, we are not usually good at seizing opportunities, but we benefited from the opportunity of demarcating the maritime border. Since there was a Western interest in having a stability in the Mediterranean region and allowing Lebanon to extract its resources. But will the Lebanese seize this opportunity to form an agreement which could result in the election of a president? We are waiting for the upcoming hours, which could evolve into security threats or perhaps surprises.
Lebanese lawmakers have failed to agree on electing a successor for Aoun, with no side having a clear majority to impose a candidate to succeed him. A caretaker government has been in place since the parliamentary elections last spring, and with no hope in forming a new cabinet in the last hours of Aoun's term, political divisions are expected to deepen until the election of a new president. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Wednesday's terror attack on Shah Cheragh Holy Shrine in Iran's city of Shiraz has saddened Iranians as well as many people around the globe. Among them, Afghans who have been bearing the brunt of blind terror attacks for years say the attack opened their old wounds. They say the tragic terror attack touched their hearts, and they share the grief of Iranian people.
I express my condolences to all Iranians, particularly those who live in Shiraz, for their losses in the terrorist attack on Shah Cheragh Shrine. I was shocked and saddened that innocent worshippers were killed there. I also express my sympathy with families of victims. Iran has not been only our neighboring country and a friend of Afghanistan, but also a second home for we Afghans.
Indeed, it was a horrific and exhausting attack. We strongly condemn it. We Afghans can feel how terrifying such attacks can be. Of course, the attack on innocent people saddened all informed and civilized people. I hope the perpetrators and organizers of the attack are brought to justice and punished.
Afghan experts and activists stress the need for global unity, especially among Muslims, against terror acts. They believe the enemies of Islam and Muslims try to destabilize the region by sowing discord among its inhabitants.
The important point about the terror attack in Iran is that some countries who claim to be superpowers, and we know them as arrogant, try to protect their hegemony in any way possible. One of their evil deeds has been plotting religious wars. In my opinion, the Shiraz attack was one of such conspiracies. I believe the Iranian people and all Muslims should be vigilant and informed, especially in the current situation.
At least 13 people, including two children, were killed after a gunman opened fire on pilgrims at the Holy Shrine in Shiraz. Dozens of others were also wounded. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility for the attack. Many Afghans consider Iran as their second home. Today, people here express sympathy for Iranians, saying they stand with the neighboring nation of Iran. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Palestinians rallied in the blockaded Gaza Strip to express their solidarity with people in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces have stepped up their crackdown, carrying out attacks across the occupied territories and the city of Al-Quds in recent weeks. This while more than 130 Palestinians have been killed by regime forces in the West Bank this year alone, amid an increase in armed resistance. Palestinian resistance factions have expressed their unwavering support for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds.
As we stand here, we affirm the unity of the Palestinian people in the face of the Zionist enemy. Palestinian resistance factions will always stand by our people in Al-Quds and in the occupied West Bank in the face of Zionist crimes. We will continue our armed resistance until the liberation of Palestine.
While Israeli forces increase their attacks in the occupied West Bank, extremist Jewish settlers have been violating the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds under the silent, watchful eye of the international community.
Today we are sending a message of solidarity to our brethren in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. The armed resistance will only increase for the sake of Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds. The Zionist occupation only understand the language of force, and we will continue the fight until martyrdom or freedom.
During the rally, Palestinian resistance groups warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank, while asserting that armed resistance is the key to freedom.
We are loyal to armed resistance and to the blood of martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the sake of liberating Al-Quds. We are fighting for a just cause, and nothing will break the resistance against the Zionist enemy. The criminal Zionist enemy has committed crimes against the Palestinians in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank, and it will pay for the crimes.
Palestinians say they want the occupied West Bank to be part of a future independent Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital.
People here vow to utilize all forms of resistance to defend Al-Quds against Israeli aggression. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyidina Khamenei has spoken during a meeting ahead of the National Student Day and the National Day of Fight Against Global Arrogance. Now, among his statements, he dismissed as a lie the U.S. assertion that the 1979 takeover of the embassy in Tehran is what set off the ongoing dispute between Iran and the U.S., saying the starting point of the row goes back to the CIA-orchestrated coup of 1953. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at decades of U.S. hostility against Iran and why the U.S. is not an untouchable power and is completely vulnerable, as Ayatollah Khamenei has stated. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Firasal Najim joins us as the manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, who joins us from Toronto. Also joining us, Mohammad Ali Araki, who's a journalist and political analyst, joining us from London. Welcome to you both.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'll start first with you, Mohammad Ali Araki. Looking at what leader's statements in terms of where he addressed it was also important, but we're going to just focus on the statements. He dismissed as a lie the U.S. assertion that the 1979 takeover of the embassy in Tehran is what set off the ongoing disputes between the Iran and the U.S. And he said the starting point really goes back to the CIA orchestrated coup back in 1953. Why did he need to make that clarification, do you think?
Hello, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to join you today on this program. So the reason to why His Eminence Ayatollah Khamenei needed to clarify this and make it clear that this is a total lie is because the United States of America has had a history full of lies, hostility, and many other crimes that they have committed. The reason to why he clarified this, he made it clear that it started in 1953 when a coup occurred. This coup was against the democratically chosen elected president, Mr. Mossadegh. And Ayatollah Khamenei, in his speech today, he said that President Mossadegh, he thought good about America, and he thought that America would help him stand up against the British. So, but in reality, the Americans, they betrayed Mr. Mossadegh, who was a friend of, who was someone who thought good of theirs. And Ayatollah Khamenei said today in his speech that the only difference, that the only thing that Mr. Mossadegh wanted and the only difference he had with the Americans was that he said that the oil of that is an Iranian property that belongs to the Iranian nation is in the hands of the British, and he wanted it to be in the hands of the Iranian nation for this wealth to go back and be invested in the country, to be invested in the nation of Iran. But the United States of America, as I said, betrayed Mr. Mossadegh and did a very bad and violent coup during those years.
Sure. Well, aside from the fact that this was a CIA-orchestrated coup, Feroz al-Najim, which we'll get into the CIA role when it comes to Iran a little later, there's a very subtle differentiation that Iran's leader made, and that is the fact that he said, you know what, Mossadegh was not a religious cleric, per se. He was just a man whom, as the prime minister, wanted oil to be for the Iranians. But to the Americans, that didn't make a difference who it was. And that's very subtle, that point, because they ultimately still wanted that oil not to be for Iran and for the Iranians in turn. Is that an important point and differentiation that was made there?
Yes. Ayatollah Khamenei is pretty much trying to expose the American agenda and their project in the Middle East, especially, and trying to show that the U.S. is after any nation that fights for its sovereignty, that wants to secure its people, its nation. And
first, Lana Jim, I think we lost you. Do you have us? No. Okay, Mohammad al-Raqi, we need to connect the dots here. So when we take a look at that statement and the differentiation that I just mentioned, it shows that Americans really didn't care about who's in power and then the oil, which would produce income for the country. That means translated, that when you translate that, that means it would be to the benefit of Iranians. So that shows that the Americans are not there backing Iranians, as they claim time and again. So when they hypocritically and shamelessly, as Iran's leader says, we support the Iranian nation, that's just not true. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I completely agree with this. The United States of America has shown in the history, in the past, and especially in the recent years in the Middle East, we have witnessed this, that any government that does not go in line with the benefits of the United States of America and its friends in the Middle East and around the world, they'll attempt to overthrow it. The government of Mr. Mossadegh was one of those examples, because the oil, if the wealth was invested in the nation and in the people, if the wealth went back to the Iranians, this would not work out for America and its friends, which in this case was the United Kingdom. And this is something very important for the United States of America, because they watch out for their friends, even if it's a crime, and they would not want, and they cannot afford, the United States of America cannot afford to make such a big loss. Therefore, they attempted to overthrow the government of Dr. Mossadegh through a coup that they made.
Very well. First of all, Najim, you're back please continue from where you left off, if you can.
Yes. So there, the main problem of the U.S. is they don't want any nation to be sovereign. They don't want a strong government that, you know, they choose the future of their nation and their destiny of the nation, and the relations with which governments they want to work with. And as we see here, that Iran is a very sovereign nation, very strong nation that stands up to the U.S., that does not give in to the bullying of the U.S. And its puppets and its allies, especially Israel, and they support the Palestinians. So it's really against the agenda and the narrative of the U.S. And this is why this is all pre-orchestrated, all these riots and this anarchy. You know, they wanted to find any type of little gap or weakness where they can exploit this issue and try to, you know, cause problems inside Iran. Because they know militarily they cannot face off with Iran. They have tried many times, and they have, bordered around Iran and different countries that they have occupied before, such as Afghanistan or Iraq. And they learned through their intelligence that, and they have also tested, you know, on several cases, the British or the U.S., were arrested, like the Navy by the British were arrested on the Iraqi-Iranian borders, and same thing in the Gulf region. The Americans were arrested at that point, the Navy, and humiliated. So they know militarily they cannot face off with Iran, so they're trying to cause something inside the country. And we see that they are hypocrites, the U.S. and the Western governments, because they talk about human rights and they talk about equality and they talk about fighting for justice and things like this. And then when they see a terrorist attack happening inside Iran and they're not friendly with Iran, they stay quiet about it and they don't condemn these attacks. And they have failed miserably over all these 40 years of the time where the establishment of this Islamic Republic of Iran. And they were humiliated, especially when they took over the diplomats from the U.S. embassy, and now we're almost marking the anniversary of that. That was a big humiliation and very clear weakness to the American government.
Okay. What's very interesting and at the same time you can call hypocritical, Muhammad Ali Araki, is the fact that you have this U.S.-sponsored U.N. meeting that's being held about what's happening in Iran. It's being held, and it's interesting because from what I understand, it's being held in Persian, but it was something that the U.S. really initiated for it to occur. And it comes smack in the face of the double standards that's at play for a country that can't control its own human rights violations that take place within its country, namely the U.S., to then come out and then plan a U.N. meeting to convene against Iran. Now, that sets a very bad precedent. Tell us why this goes against all norms, which in one critical analysis, it says the U.S. is using the U.N. for its own political goals.
Yes. So the United States of America is using the United Nations for its own political goals because clearly the United States is not after morals. The United States is not after helping other nations, as it says. And as you have seen, the current situation that was occurring previously in Iran, the unrest and the protests, okay, these were all backed by the United States of America. And technically, the United States of America will look for a way to give a fake legitimacy to what they are doing in the Islamic Republic of Iran. But thankfully, the situation has calmed down, and the United States of America is not a democratic country. They are not looking to help the Iranians. They have had a history from the beginning of the Islamic Revolution, going back to 1953, where the coup happened, where they did a coup against the government of Mr. Mossadegh. They have had a history of abuse, of sanctioning, of lots of different crimes that they have committed against the Iranian nation. And so I do not think that the United States of America is a government that is looking for the interest of the Iranian nation. And further on, in the recent years, the Americans have confessed themselves that they have put sanctions that are unique in the history. They have said that we have not launched any such of these sanctions against any nation around the world. So this technically does not show that the United States of America is for the Iranian nation. And on the media, technically, people may see that, yes, they may be, but the reality is that the media, they are spreading lies and they are not honest about the actual story that is going on in Iran.
Well, the media has been mentioned, and the leader also talked about the report jointly that came out on the intelligence ministries. First of all, Najim, you're back. Great. So my question is to you then. This report that came out talked about the role of the CIA that was probably executed in conjunction with the role of Israel's Mossad and the British spy agency, along with Saudi Arabia, of which they executed what we're seeing to have translated on the streets, as one example. But then the media was also very much key in stimulating people who they wanted to change their perspective and their opinion. For example, using social media like Twitter, Instagram, which they used fake news in order to, again, affect people's minds. These were all pre-planned, so they took the opportunity to do that. Now, my question is, we're seeing the CIA ultimately want to go for some kind of revolution here. The regime change has been on the U.S.'s mind for decades. How much do you think they've been successful in that? And how do you see the way that Iran has reacted to that from the window of the intelligence ministries?
Yes, I think the Iranian government, the Iranian authorities were very vigilant, very patient, and they had a very good plan on how to deal with these, you know, this chaos and this orchestrated Western project, like you said, CIA, Mossad, Zionists. They dealt with it in a very, very smart way, and they gave them room to move and do what they wanted to do in a way, but to also keep the peace and control things. And at the same time, they exposed the nature of these groups and these anarchists and these terrorists, and they showed the world as well, and showed their nation that, you see, if things get out of hand, there's going to be a lot of different terrorist attacks inside the country. And this is exactly what they did to other countries in neighboring countries, such as Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria. So the Iranian nation is very wise, and they know what's going to come out as an outcome if, you know, God forbid, something bad happened inside Iran. So they also, you know, took time to actually, you know, arrest all these people. And then now they will be working on collecting intelligence and seeing who these people are associated with and who's funding them and who's supporting them, things like that. And social media played a very, very bad role and very biased role. You know, we tested that in different ways. For instance, we opened accounts, you know, without following anybody, just to see what's on the homepage and what's trending. And all you see is 80% of the videos are all about this so-called Iranian revolution, this so-called Iranian regime change, and so on. You see videos on social media pretty much empowering the movement inside Iran. I think the movement inside Iran were being influenced by all the social media and media from the West, unfortunately. And, you know, we've seen this, like I said, several times, even here in Canada. The other day, we did a protest against these, you know, these Islamophobic. Some of them were Islamophobic. They were protesting against the mosque, Imam Mehdi Mosque here in Thornhill. Right. And they turned the whole scenario upside down, made it look like we were going to attack the protesters with the vehicle. This is what the police and the media portrayed it, you know. And they watched these Islamophobic people, like, cause all types of, you know, seditions and say all kinds of very bad things.
All right, Muhammad Ali Araki, the way that this relationship, or lack of it, has progressed, there was one key moment when one of former U.S. Politician, I want to find out if you agree with me, said something that really opened the door as to the depth of the way the U.S. feels about Iranians now, just Iranians. And that was when the former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told the U.K. government-funded network that they have, the BBC, that Iranian officials must listen to Washington if they want their people to eat. The former foreign minister of Iran said that's a crime against humanity, using those types of rhetoric against the Iranian nation. I don't know if you remember that, but if you do, please give us your reaction. And if you agree, that really shows how U.S. politicians actually think about Iranians.
So the United States of America and Mr. Mike Pompeo, they have basically they've shot themselves in the foot by releasing such a statement, because they have now clarified here, they have done this in the past as well, and different crimes that they have committed, especially after the revolution of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They have shown that they are not for the Iranian people. They are not with the Iranian people. They have shown here that if the Islamic Republic of Iran, if they step down from their beliefs, from their policies within the region and around the world, then they will ease the sanctions. And this is a complete lie. That's not going to happen. The United States of America will not let the Iranian people eat until the point that the United States of America has full dominance over the Islamic Republic of Iran, and that will not happen. So the United States have exposed themselves, and I think this should make it clear for many people that America is not with the Iranian people. And even with this recent Mahsa Amini protest that happened, we saw it that many of the trending hashtags on social media, they were done by robots. So they were not by the normal people. And it shows that clearly the United States of America is behind this, and they are not for the Iranian people.
Iran's leader, I need to mention this, Hafez al-Najim, has said that when it comes to the protests, which are mainly, we're seeing a lot of teens and young people who are conducting it, he said, and I'm quoting him, they participated because of excitement and emotions and a lack of understanding of what is going on. And he said, the ones who matter are the main directors of these incidents who act behind with a plan. So that's well known, because we're seeing the really massive advancements of different agendas that is being executed around the world, whether it's Germany, whether it's Australia, New York, California, etc. But what has happened is that that hasn't really bore the results that the U.S. wants. The U.S. has not been successful in this case or in other cases, like in Afghanistan, like in Iraq, like in Syria. The last time they won a war, I can't even recall. Can you? Therefore, showing that the U.S. is in a decline, based on what Iran's leader has said, its miscalculations have cost them the once perhaps superpower that they may have had. How do you think that? Do you think that's true? Do you think the U.S. has lost that status and is now on the decline? And based on some, analysis, it's not going to be able to retain that power?
Yes, the U.S. has lost its trust in the world, especially with these last few years of what they're doing, and especially now with the Ukraine situation, how they propped up the Ukrainian Zionist Zelensky leader to start a war inside the Ukraine against Russia, and then they left him pretty much alone, and his nation just gave him weapons and so on, and exploit that whole situation. Like Ayatollah Khamenei said, that new world order, it's going to exclude the U.S. They have no role in the new world order. They have lost their role, and they have lost their position, and they have lost their power, and they are declining. And like he said, a few years back, I recall, he said that they are similar to Titanic, and they're a sinking ship, and they will fall. So the U.S., reached to a high level of arrogance and a high level of oppression in the world, and they have lost their trust within the world. And the axis of resistance is the main victory against the U.S. and the weakness of the U.S. is because of the axis of resistance and the unified support and the blood of the martyrs, especially the recent martyrs Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis. And you mentioned Mike Pompeo a little while ago. Mike Pompeo is scared for his life because he knows that the Iranian government is after him, because he had a role. And he declared that he was a supporter of the assassination of Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, these great generals that defeated ISIS. So Iran is in a very strong position right now, and they have exposed the world. And hopefully these young people that are deceived on the streets will think about their national interest and think about the unification of Iran and the strength of the leadership of Sayyid Khamenei.
Sure. November 4th, last question goes to you, Mohammad Ali Araki. Iran's leader said the takeover of the U.S. embassy proved that Washington is completely vulnerable in the context of the New World Order, which Iran's leader has said the U.S. is going to be isolated. Do you think that is how things will transpire? Less than a minute, please.
Yes, the United States of America, the decline is irreversible. The decline is happening, and as we can see around the world, and the relationship of the United States of America with its friends around the world is going to a negative direction, meaning that it's not as smooth as before,
okay.
And United States of America will
well.
Not have any place in the future
Thank
powers
you.
Around the world.
Thank you, Mohammed Ali Araki, journalist and political analyst from London. Faraz Al-Najim, thank you. Manager of Canadian Defenders for Human Rights from Toronto. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitavway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The latest U.S. nuclear strategy, together with its related policies and plans, will definitely have a seriously negative impact on global strategic security and stability, the strategic security relationship among major powers, as well as on the international and multinational nuclear arms control, disarmament, and non-proliferation processes. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT reported Washington's updated nuclear energy hypes up major power competition and alleged foreign threats, Beijing said. China has said that any attempts at nuclear blackmail by the United States will fail, accusing Washington of encouraging confrontation after it issued its latest nuclear posture review, NPR. asked about the recently published document, which lays out U.S. nuclear weapons policies. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin said DNPR smacks heavily of Cold War and zero-sum mentality and uses nuclear weapons as tools to advance the U.S. geopolitical agenda. Wang told reporters, adding that the United States has a specifically tailored a nuclear deterrence strategy against Beijing, I need to stress that in this latest NPR, the U.S. has made irresponsible remarks and accusations as well as groundless speculations on China's normal modernization of its nuclear forces. The new U.S. strategy, a declassified version of which was published recently, breaks with campaign promises made by President Joe Biden, leaving the door open for a nuclear response to a non-nuclear attack. While Biden has insisted the sole purpose of America's nuclear arsenal is to deter or retaliate against the first use of the bomb, the White House approved NPR concluded that such an approach would result in an unacceptable level of risk in light of the range of non-nuclear capabilities being developed and fielded by the competitors. Wang went on to say that the updated American policy lowers the threshold for using nuclear weapons, while at the same time hyping up the so-called nuclear threat from certain countries. The U.S. has the largest nuclear arsenal in the world and continues to upgrade its nuclear triad and selectively advances the international nuclear arms control process only when doing so serves to suppress the countries it sees as rivals, he continued, adding, what's behind the U.S. policy is its hegemonic logic of seeking absolute military superiority, which could stoke a nuclear arms race. The Biden administration has repeatedly declared China to be Washington's top competitor and for most concern, with the Pentagon saying Beijing poses the most comprehensive and serious challenge to the U.S. national security in its new national defense strategy, also published recently alongside the new NPR and a missile defense review. Tensions have spiked between the two powers since August when U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan, despite loud objections from Beijing, which sees the island as part of its own territory. Though the trip promoted an unprecedented round of Chinese military drills in the air and water surrounding Taiwan, Western delegations have nonetheless continued to visit Taipei in the months since, with Germany sending lawmakers on a junket there earlier this week. Meanwhile, China Daily reported Chinese Ambassador for Disarmament Affairs Li Song blasted the newly released Nuclear Posture Review NPR of the U.S. regime. In his remarks at a plenary meeting of the First Committee of the UN General Assembly, Li said the NPR reveals how the U.S., with its nuclear weapons in hand, observes the world and deals with other countries. He said this document hypes up major power competition and bloc confrontation, which reflects the logic of hegemonism seeking absolute military superiority. This is clearly against the world's desire to prevent nuclear war and avoid a nuclear arms race. The latest U.S. nuclear strategy, together with its related policies and plans, will definitely have a complex, far-reaching, and negative impact on global strategic security and stability. The strategic security relationship among major powers, as well as on the international and multinational nuclear nuclear arms control. In this NPR, the U.S. regime has made irresponsible remarks and accusations, as well as groundless speculation on China's normal modernization of its nuclear forces. It has brazenly tailored a nuclear deterrence strategy against China. Lee said, "We urge the U.S. not to assess China in the hegemonistic way that the U.S. behaves itself and imagine other countries as rivals or adversaries." Lee noted that China has the capability and confidence in safeguarding its national security interests, and that China will not be intimidated by the nuclear blackmail of the U.S. regime. "We urge the U.S. to abandon the Cold War mentality and the logic of hegemonism, pursue a rational and responsible nuclear policy, fulfill its special and primary responsibility in nuclear disarmament, and play its due role in maintaining global strategic stability and world peace and security."
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.